Blog Talk Radio.
Fingers weary and worn, with eyes heavy and red, a woman found on womanly rag, plying needle and thread. Stitch, 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 in poverty, hunger, and dirt. But still with a voice of dolorous pitch, she sang the song of the shirt. Work, 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 while the cock is crowing aloof. Work, 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 till the stars shine through the roof. Oh, so to be a slave, along with a barbarous Turk, where woman is never a soul to save, if this is Christian work. Work, 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 till the brains begin to swim. Work, 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 till my eyes are heavy and dim. Seam and gusset and band, band and gusset and seam, till over the buttons I fall asleep and sew them on in a dream. Oh, men with sisters dear, oh, men with mothers and wives, it is not linen you're wearing out, but human creatures live. Stitch, 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 in poverty, hunger, and dirt, sewed at once with a double thread, a shroud as well as a shirt. Why do I talk of death, that phantom of grisly bone? I hardly fear a terrible shape, it seems so like my own. It seems so like my own, because of the fast I keep. Oh God, the bread should be so dear, and flesh and blood so cheap. Work, 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 my labor never flags, and what are its wages, a crust of bread, a bed of straw and rags? A shattered roof, a naked floor, a table, a broken chair, and a wall so blank my shadow I thank for sometimes falling there. Work, 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 from weary chime to chime, work, 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 as prisoners work for crime. Van against the scene, seam and gusset and band, till the heart is sick, the brain benumb, as well as a weary hand. Work, 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 in the dull December light. Work, 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 when the weather is warm and bright. While underneath the eaves, the brooding swallows blink, ask best to show me the sunny back and clip me with the spring. But oh, to breathe the breath of the castle of primrose sweet, the sky above my head and the grass beneath my feet. For only one short hour to feel as I used to feel, before I knew the woes of want and the walk that cost so meal. But over one short hour, I'll rest for however brief, no blessed leave for love or hope, but only time for grief. A little weeping will ease my heart, but in the briny bed, my tears will stop for every drop, hinges, needle, and thread. With fingers weary and worn, with eyes heavy and red, a woman sat on womanly rag, plying a needle and thread. Stitch, 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 in poverty, hunger, and dirt, but still with a voice of dolorous pitch, would that its tone could reach the rich, she sang the song of the shirt.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. Well, it depends on what day that is. I hope everyone's having a good week and a better week to follow. That's my tagline. Hello, Pam, and hello, Kate. Welcome to the party.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
Hello, hello. Cool. Me too.
There she is. That voice from so far away.
Oh,
God. A little ghostly, I say. So, Pam, tell us about the show tonight. Too funny.
Yes. Yes. Well, tonight we are having poetry inspired by quotes of the poet Thomas Hood. And today actually happens to be his birthday. It also happens to be my oldest child's birthday. So I'd like to give a shout out to them. You know, happy birthday to both
happy
you
birthday.
And Thomas Hood. And yeah.
Happy birthday. There you
so,
go.
But Thomas Hood has often been called one of the lesser and unappreciated poets of the Romanticism era of poetry. He actually was quite sickly his whole life and died at the age of 45. But within that short lifetime, did quite a bit. He was a poet, an author, and a humorist known for such poems as The Bridge of the Sigh and The Song of the Shirt, which was actually the intro song we heard. That was a perfect find for the show because It just so happened to be one of his songs that somebody had put, or one of his poems that somebody had put to music. It was actually used oftentimes as a protest song for poor working conditions. He was an assistant to a printer by the age of 14. By the age of 15, he was regularly sending in humorous poems to humorous and political magazines of the time. And by the age of 21, was a sub-editor, like an assistant editor for a magazine. And let's see, he was very much known by family and friends and people who weren't family or friends for his love of practical jokes and puns. One time, there was this lady that came to the house to sell her husband's fish, and Mr. Hood was always the one who bought them. Well, that day he told his wife, who apparently hadn't seen a whole lot of fish in her life, but he told his wife to purchase the fish that day as he couldn't, but not to purchase any that had any red or orange spots. So this poor woman spent a lot of time rejecting a whole bunch of fish because it just so happened the particular fish this other woman brought over to sell were a kind that all had red or orange spots. And so he was definitely quite a character. And, you know, I just happened to see on, the website Brainy Quotes that today was his birthday. I saw some of his quotes and thought, you know what, I think that could make for some great inspiration.
There you go. There you go. Well, that sounds good to me. That's a good reason as any, right?
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think so. Yeah. And there probably are people out there who have heard of him, but you never know. Sometimes you might be introducing someone to a poet they've never heard of.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
That's
nothing unusual for me. Yeah, I've been most of my life, you know. I don't know. Sheltered. There's a lot of things I don't know about. Mm-hmm. Okay, Pam. Well, that sounds like a wonderful poet to work with tonight. You know, works out nicely. So whenever you're ready, we'll do it whatever direction you want to go.
All right. Well, as usual on a Tuesday, I'm going to have us start out with a classic poem, which of course was a pretty fairly easy, obviously. I would go with a Thomas Hood poem. But this is Past and Present by Thomas Hood. And I was wondering, Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly, I'd be happy to. I hope you can hear me all right, can you?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Good, thank you very much. Okay. Past and present. I remember the house where I was born, little window where the sun came peeping in at morn. He never came a wink too soon, nor brought too long a day, but now I often wish the night had borne my breath away. I remember the roses red and white, the violets and the lily cups, those flowers made of light, the lilacs where the robin built, and where my brother set the laburnum on his birthday. The tree is living yet. I remember when I was used to swing and thought the air must rush as fresh to swallows on the wing. My spirit flew in feathers then that is so heavy now, and summer pools could hardly cool the fever on my brow. I remember the fir trees dark and high. I used to think their slender tops were close against the sky. It was a childish ignorance, but now 'tis little joy to know I'm further off from heaven than when I was a boy. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Kate. Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, I went back and forth about which poem to choose, because I said it was easy, and it wasn't that I knew which poet I was going to go with, but he actually has quite a few poems on All Poetry, and I kind of went back and forth, because there were so many that I really liked, and I thought make good intro poems. I chose this one partially because the end lines were actually end lines were one of the prompts put in the contest. It was childish ignorance, but now 'tis little joy to know I'm farther off from heaven than when I was a boy. And I like how that just spoke on the idea that often children know things and you know, have an innocence to them that we lose over time. And I really liked the repetition of I remember and the imagery in this and how it speaks of nostalgia and it speaks of growing up and how our spirit kind of changes and becomes heavier. So, yeah, well, that was my thoughts on the poem. But Jean, your thoughts on this classic poem?
Unmute, my dear.
You knew I was muted, Kate, because I didn't. you know, I have to agree. I like the line, I remember. I think that's a wonderful repeat line throughout the poem. Excuse me. And, God, each stanza was really well done. I like this one. I remember the roses red and white, the violets and the lily cups. Those flowers made of light. The lilacs where the robin built and where my brother set the laburnum on his birthday. The tree is living yet. That's just one. I mean, they were all really well done. But that one in particular was a pretty one. It was pretty. It talked about flowers, and I like that. But each one was just, I thought, wonderful. So great choice of intro poems, man. Nicely done.
Wonderful comment. And Kate, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Thank you. I stumbled a couple of times. But I think it's more to do with the fact that when this was, I don't know, when it was written, they used an F, a foxtrot, instead of an S. For Sierra, I think that came across. I can't find it now, of course. It actually is using the F instead of the S. Can't find it. And somehow, no. Well, I'm not going to be able to find it. But I think when you read it again, you'll see. Yes, that last stanza is really lovely, and the one with all the flowers are so sweet. And I do like the repeat line. I've always liked that idea. It's so cool. You could put anything in between. You've got your two, I remember, and then again in the next stanza. So, yeah, great, have fun. But, yeah, good. Mm. Very good. Very classic, obviously. You can hear the weight of the ages past in the words that were used and everything about it, I think. Yes, it was great. Good choice.
Yep. Thank you. And yes, I have to agree. It definitely has, with its imagery and language choice, a very classic feel to it. So, great comment. All right. Well, up next we have Think to Save Time and Your Breath by Jenny the Deep. And it goes like this. Think before you speak may sound cliche, but it can help keep arguments at bay. By simply thinking before speaking your mind, you could save an hour's worth of wasted time. Don't believe me? Just ask my spouse. So many times I should have stopped his shout. If only I can learn to keep my mouth shut instead of rambling on to the heat of the on in the heat of the moment. Controlling how you react after harsh reactions during disagreements indeed has challenges. Wiser to pick your battles, saving your breath, than wasting time digging deeper holes in verbal hell. and poem. And she wrote to the prompt, "A moment's thinking is an hour in words." And Jean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this was really well done by Jenny. She spoke many truths in this, you know, knowing when to and when not to stop within an argument. Yeah, there's a few ways of doing that, but Kate and I are not going to explain those other ideas. I think that Jenny had the most mild answer. Right, Kate? I think. Mm-hmm. You know, think before you speak may sound cliche, but it can help keep arguments at bay. By simply thinking before speaking your mind, you could save an hour's worth of wasted time. You know, how true, how true. And the second stanza the same. I think it follows all the way through, and I think Jenny did a great job writing this. So well done, Hannah, and thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, it's very true. This is well written, and it's certainly very relevant because, let's face it, we always say we're going, no, I'm not going to rise to the bait. No, I'm not going to argue. No, I'm not going to shout. And then whoever you're arguing with, who probably knows you very well, hits that button, that one button that makes you explode in anger.
Mm-hmm.
And that you've lost is gone. Once you've lost your temper, you've lost your argument. So, yes, it is a good idea to control. I mean, I have no problem. I don't actually use words. I just punch. End of story. Argument.
That was kind of what I had in mind with what I...
What? I do, yes. Brilliantly done and most enjoyable. Thank you, Jenny.
Yeah. The only time I've ever punched someone was in high school. However, I have lost my temper to the point of throwing dishes and even one time a chair against the wall. So I can't be accused of, you know, not having a temper. But, yeah, I like what you had to say, Kate. In fact, I like what you both had to say, and I have to agree. This is definitely a poem filled with a lot of wisdom about the importance of, first of all, whenever possible, you know, taking time to think before you say something. You know, obviously there are some things you eventually have to say something about, even if it's going to lead to an argument, because it has to be said. But I really liked this all the way through, but it was that first stanza that I really particularly liked. And then this line, "Don't believe me, I'm just ask my spouse." So many times I could have stopped his shout. And then this one where it says, "Controlling how you react after harsh actions during disagreements indeed has challenges." I like that she acknowledges that this isn't an easy process. You know, and it takes time, it takes learning, and, you know, just a really great write off of the chosen prompt. Very well done. All right, now the question is did I grab the next poem? And nope, I did not. So I will go ahead and I will do that. All right, do-do-do. All right, let's see. We have "The Life of Heaven's Joy" by Way Down Upon Joy. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure thing. "A Life of Heaven's Joy" by Way Down Upon Joy. There was no doubt I watched each sun mark time each day I played, was moved like tides by moans each night to dream life unafraid. If heaven held the keys to glory, I was just a brand new story, unaware of allegory, or that which was blade. Each day would share experience as wisdom's hand stretched out, and passing years of living came to wake my mind to doubt. My childish ignorance matured, while thoughtfulness sought reassured, to mind a future still obscured by clouds that hung about. Now that I feel the distance loom and watch the starry skies, I wonder if the joy I knew could serve to energize. If further off from heaven's place is just a state of mind and grace, let distance fill that outer space anew with childish eyes. End quote.
Wonderful, Regine. And as always, a beautiful write by Way Down Upon Joy. She wrote to the prompt, it was a childish ignorance, but now 'tis little joy to know I'm further off from heaven than when I was a boy. And what a great prompt for her to choose. And the fact that she put her name into it, you know, which is obviously works with the prompt, but, you know, also is her name. And I like how she brings us through what it's like to have that bravery, that dream life of a child, and what it's like to slowly, you know, mature and lose some of that. You know, all three stanzas are absolutely beautiful, the rhyme, the flow, their imagery, and their messages, and of transitioning from childhood to adulthood. And I really particularly like, though, my childish ignorance matured while thoughtfulness sought reassured, to mind a future still obscured by clouds that hung about. Now that I feel the distance loom and watch the starry skies, I wonder if the joy I knew would serve to energize. I like that part, how it speaks on the importance of maturity and thoughtfulness, but also takes a look back at our childhood and, you know, wondering, could we possibly find that kind of same enthusiasm for life that we used to have? You know, wonderful write and very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
Very, very beautiful little piece of poetry. I really enjoyed it. It was sweet. Basically telling us, I suppose, that as children, we can see a dandelion as a rose. And as we grow older, fighting against the dandelions in our lawn. Basically, this is that kind of thing that you can bring back the wonder that we felt as children. Because everything was an adventure. And I don't know, maybe not so much for children nowadays. But your imagination could people your world with so many interesting adventures. So yes, it's a lovely state of mind to be in. I can imagine also that you're looking at the days going past as well and hoping that you are getting wiser as you get older. So yes, I really enjoyed this very, very interesting poem.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, first I have to finish out Kate's thought. And then when you get a little older, Kate, you think about making dandelion wine with those dandelions. It becomes a whole different thing.
Wow. Yes.
Just your perspective changes, that's all. I love this poem by Joy. I think it was just really well done, beautifully expressed piece. I love how she started out. There was no doubt I watched each sun, marked time each day I played, was moved like tides by moons each night, to dream life unafraid. If heaven held the keys to glory, I was just a brand new story, unaware of allegory or that which was delayed. A wonderful, wonderful beginning to the poem. And the next two stanzas were wonderful. I love the ending, the way she ended it, you know. If further off in heaven's place is just a state of mind and grace, the distance filled that outer space anew with childish eyes. I love that. I think that has a really classic feel to me. So I think this was just wonderfully penned. So nice work, Joy, and thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. All right. And up next we have A Moment by Weaver of Dreams, and Kate was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud, so whenever you're ready, June.
Here we go.
My thoughts dart, drift, and flutter as the fragile wings of a hummingbird. Stilled, then in an instant, it is gone, with a swiftness belied by its fragility. The lightest of musings, when scribed on paper, turn each word into a tome. Do not stifle or tie down my deliberations, lest lost is the spontaneous joy of my love. I will take my ardent admiration and desires, then write with fireflies across the night sky. The light holds my truthful words for nanoseconds, no less my aspirations, if they were carved in stone.
Wonderful read and write, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in or you just prefer making sure to read your poem ahead of time, for, your next best option to calling in is to make a recording, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Jean, your thoughts on Kate's poem?
Well, nope, have to go second this time. Be right with you when you're ready.
Oh, sure, no problem. Well, Kate, I thought this was absolutely beautiful all the way through, wonderful imagery and metaphors. I really like that you start with, my thoughts dart, drift, and flutter as the fragile wings of a hummingbird. I thought that was the movement of a hummingbird, the franticness of it, made for a great imagery for those fleety, flighting thoughts. And let's see. And I really like this all the way through, but another great part is, do not stifle or tie down my deliberations, lest lost is the spontaneous joy of my love. You know, I like how you put so much of your personality in this and in those lines. Say, you know, let me be my spontaneous and joyful self. I really particularly like the ending, which says, the light holds my truthful words for nanoseconds, no less my aspirations if they were carved in stone. I think that, well, first of all, I find it really cool that it connects in its own way with the poet we're featuring tonight, who put many of his poetry into engravings because he believed that putting it in an engraving made it somehow more official. And you're saying in yours, you know, it doesn't matter where my words are put. They're still, or how they're put, you know, they don't need to be carved in stone, to be just lightly cast out into the air, or, you know, written on paper with a pencil that can be erased. They're still out there for those fleeting seconds, and they're still expressing who I am. So I thought that was quite clever. Wonderful write, and very well done. And are you back with us, Jean?
I am. I just needed to read it a little bit more because I was finishing a comment. Kate, I thought that this was just a wonderful write. I loved your use of couplets in this, because nothing was weighty, you know. The hummingbirds were light. The fireflies are light. The way the words were put together was light. And at least that's how it hits me. And I like that very much. My thoughts dart, drift, and flutter as the fragile wings of a hummingbird. Stilled, then in an instant it is gone, with the swiftness belied to its fragility. That was lovely there. And then down here it was, I will take my ardent admiration and desires, then write with fireflies across the night sky. The light holds my truthful words for nanoseconds, no less my aspirations if they were carved in stone. You know, it just, I don't know, it just had this real, I don't know, I just really liked the choices. You know, I loved the hummingbirds, I loved the fireflies, I loved the way the thoughts were no heavier than those two objects. I mean, it sounds so silly, I guess, but I find it to be just a really great piece. And very well done, and thank you so much for sharing. I loved your take on the prompt as well.
Oh, thank you both very much. Nice, lovely comments.
Yes, wonderful comments. And yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that you were inspired, Kate. Would you like to say anything about your poem?
Only that I really enjoyed writing it. It was the most fun because I wanted something like this. I need to try and stretch and learn to use different styles. Because mine, as I've already said, is very dum-de-dum-de-dum, where this is, I hope, a little less dum-de-dum-de-dum. So, yes, I did enjoy it very much. So, thank you.
Wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. All right. And up next, we have Mash My Fruit No More by Julie Buck. And, Jean, would you please give that a read?
Yes. Kate, when you read that thing, I wasn't drunk, I just had to go do something.
Okay, that'll be fun.
Okay, here we go. Oh, I like the title of this one. Mash My Fruit No More by Julie Buck. And her quote that she used was, half of the failures in life come from pulling one's horse when he is leaping. I did read that right. Okay. Here we go. Cut me in two and still my belly chuckle is hungry to announce that about half of my brown watch. Yeah, let me try it again. Sorry. I'm going to think for a second. Cut me in two and still my belly chuckle is hungry to announce that about half of my brown watch outs have been due to not listening to the beast within. Mine is a horse that pants and snorts, failing to smell fortune's bouquet. Mash my fruit no more. Your eagerness gets in your way. When your mare is on a mission, never call out her name. As she is leading you to victory, let the orange mane bathe in its brief blaze of fame. As things are over too soon, let your horse be your regime. For the milk of human kindness has thickened into an unequal cream. End poem.
Great read there, Jean. And creative and fun write by Julie Buck. I really feel like she's captured some of the tone of the more humorous social commentary of Thomas Hood's poetry, who was actually often known for his dark sense of humor. I really see the imagery and metaphors in this. And mine is a horse that pants and snorts, failing to smell fortune's bouquet. Mash my fruit no more, your eagerness gets in your way. And when your mayor is on a mission, never call out her name. I like that. I think the line, when your mayor is on a mission, never call out her name, would make for a good prompt for a poetry contest. So wonderful lines by Julie, speaking on knowing when to let something move forward, you know, and so very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
There are some lovely lines in this, really. And obviously somebody who loves horses, which is just so cool. That stanza you spoke about there was one that caught my attention too. But that second stanza. Mine is a horse that pants and snorts, failing to smell fortune's bouquet. Mash my fruit no more, her eagerness gets in your way. I love that phrase, mash my fruit. At first I thought, okay. Then I realized this was not, there was no innuendo implied at all. mash my fruit with a vegetable. Oh, very good. I wonder if that's something that people actually say out in the real world, or do you mash my fruit? Same as that other one.
Yeah, like, I imagine that would get quite a few looks, and I think you're right. There is a slight, there is an innuendo-type feel to that, for sure. So, great comment.
Thank you, my
dear. Your thoughts?
You know, I think that Julie did a great job with this prompt. She captured it right in the beginning, in the very first stanza. You know, cut me in two and still my belly chuckled, hungry to announce that about half of my brown life out has been due to not listening to the beast within. It's very true. And I think it suits that prompt very well. But then, in the third stanza, she nods her head to the prompt again. When your mare is on a mission, never call out her name, as she is leading you to victory. Let the orange mane bathe in its brief blaze of fame. You know, that's just, it warns against it. Just warns against stopping that horse. You know, don't call it. Don't distract it. Just let it run. And I think that it was well done by Julie. It was very well done. So thank you, Julie, and great job.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm. And up next, we have Memoir of an Emperor's Council by Luna Lady. And it goes like this. I long ago gave up upon advising those who do look down their haughty nose beneath their crown, which they suppose gives them renown. Witty, verbose men about town, thinking they know what's up, what's down. Clever fellows by their account, kings and pharaohs above the crowd. Views they impose on all around, their conceit grows, truth they confound. In see-through robes, vanity's gowns, no wisdom below, nor learning found. Dressed head to toe in false hand-me-downs, yes, long ago I gave up upon advising those bare-naked clowns. End poem. And she was inspired by prompt two, which was to attempt to advise conceited people is like whistling against the wind. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yes, this is very true. It's very hard to advise anybody who thinks that they know best. You just never get through that veneer of haughtiness and pride. And it's also, they love to show off. They will use huge, long, amazing words. They don't even know most of the time of how to pronounce or how, what they mean. But that is a typical of an insular kind of personality who thinks that they are everything and they can do. I mean, really, in see-through robes, vanity gowns, no wisdom below, nor learning found. So they weren't talking out of their extremities, the lower regions. Yeah, very good. I liked it. I like the look at what is actually just a clown in reality. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought that this was a great take on the prompt all the way through. The whole poem is that reflection of the prompt. I long ago gave up upon advising those who do look down, their haughty nose beneath their crown, which they suppose gives them renown. Witty, verbose men about town, thinking they know what's up, what's down. Clever fellows by their account, kings and pharaohs above the crowd. You know, she sunk her teeth into that prompt and just stayed there. Held on like a pit bull with this. And I think that it was a great job. Really, I thought it was a great job. I mean, she did not let go of the concept of that prompt, not for a minute. So very well done. And thanks for sharing with us, Newman Lady. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I just really liked that analogy. But it is so true. You're right. She really stayed consistent with the theme, her theme of the poem, and which lined up with the prompt so well. This has a great rhyme and flow. I really like that title, Memoir of an Emperor's Council. And I like how she makes the references to the story, The Emperor's New Clothes, which I thought was a great a metaphor or analogy for, you know, political systems throughout history and even current times. I have to agree when Kate said and laugh when she said, no wisdom below nor learning found, like the idea that they're all speaking out of their extremities. What else? I mean, all the way through, it's a wonder poem. I like the use of the word verbose. You know, some words just really stand out. I like how this speaks on people who have too high of a thought of their own self-importance. I also like dressed head to toe in false hand-me-downs. Yes, long ago I gave up upon advising those bare naked clowns. You know, the idea that some people will just not learn because they are stuck in their ways. So excellent write and very well done. All right. And I'll grab the next poem and put that up. And All right. Up next we have, let's try that again. We have Golden Machines by Silent Tree. And when you see that, Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
I certainly will. So this is Golden Machines by Silent Tree. Prairie swallows wispy frolic within the springtide hues of fog-frosted meadows. Dawn's straw-sheaved harvest, a hedgerow of hay string nests and golden machines. Pastel perfume petals of lacquered sap breathe mustard whiskey's honeybees as a labyrinth of forest whispers fall from the feathered tongue of histories. On faded desert dunes, a restless tide decays as the yonder mountains scream. In the whirlwind grains of stardust I dwell, chained inside my watercolored dreams. Winged seabirds sail skywards to songs, birthed from wombs deep within an ancient sea. Above skies, hung of silver cotton fleece, eclipse the sun in raindrop river reveries. Diamond dewdrops fell in silence atop a plateau of sapphire crescent waves. As footsteps meander, yawning throats within the shade of a mollusk cave. My weathered leather flesh wraps a gilded canary cage of hollow bones. Terracotta teardrops drown the phrases etched on yellowed paper, parchment tomes. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Kate. And Silent Tree was inspired by the prompt. This is the greatest artist in our clime. He paints in nature and describes in rhyme, and rhyme being R-I-M-E, which is actually another word for frost. So there was some wordplay in that quote. I really thought this was beautiful. I like how she took a hold of that prompt, and she ran with it to not just cover the snow and the frost and the wintertime beauty, but the beauty of all nature stretched out across the land. I really liked this part. Pastel perfume petals of lacquered sap, breathe mustard whiskered honeybees. As a labyrinth, the forest whispers fall from the feathered tongues of histories. I like how that speaks on the idea of the history of a land and the beauty of it. And, you know, the importance of every flower and every bumblebee. I also like the stanza after that where it says, in the whirlwind grains of stardust I dwell, chained inside my watercolor dreams. So Those are really the lines, I think, of somebody who is an artist or has a very, you know, has a very creative mind and sees a painting and a photograph in those moments of going for walks amongst nature. Just amazing imagery all the way through. I love how it speaks on the idea of the beauty of nature, the creative experience, and then just capturing it, you know, and wonderful write and very well done. And your thoughts, Kate?
Oh, yes, this was just, this flew. It was just lovely. The old machines, you're looking at the, you know, the world of putting together, affecting what you need for the following year coming, for the year coming. And it really, it worked so well with that, with the harvest of hedgerows, of hay, stringed nests and golden machines. And, you know, it goes on then to talk about whirlwind grains of stardust, I dwell chained inside my watercolor dreams. So it's such a lovely metaphor, I think, and very well done all the way through. That last line's an absolute cracker. Terracotta teardrops drown the phrases etched on yellow papered parchment tomes. That's only the second time I've ever seen that word used amongst our fraternity, as it were. So it's a great word. I liked it a lot. And this is a very nice, very bright, although there are traces of sadness, it's a lovely piece of poetry. So thank you, Silent Tree.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I have to agree, you know, that great use of the word tome, which means a, you know, a particularly heavy or large book often used for learning. I also like the alliteration that they put in this. And, you know, you brought up one part that I had skipped over that, where was that? I can't find out. Oh, harvest a hedgerow of hay. You know, that part I wasn't 100% sure what a hedgerow was, but then when she connected of hay, I figured it must be like the way that the hay is lined up or something. But I'm still not 100% certain. Do you know what a hedgerow is?
Well, in actual fact, I think it's pronounced, or you would say hedgerow. It's basically the hedges that make up the boundaries of the field.
Oh, hedgerow. Okay.
Not grow, but row, hedge row. And that's...
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what it is. Well, as far as I know, I could be totally wrong, but I don't think so. I think it is.
Well,
can you imagine it?
You learn something new. New words, new definitions. You know, that's the great thing about poetry. So, wonderful write by Silent Tree. I'm glad they were inspired. And... Are you back, Jean?
I am. I want to make sure I was unmuted, too. sorry about that. But this was just, I thought this was a fabulous piece. Beautiful imagery throughout, you know, from what I could see from beginning to end. I mean, it's very well done that way. I thought it was well written and an excellent take on the prompt. I saw a word moments ago in this poem. I went and I looked it up, and I came back, and I can't find it again. So no big deal. It's okay. It had to do with frost. It's all right. But I really thought I picked this piece up from the beginning and said, prairie swallows briskly frolic within the springtide hues of fog-frosted meadows. Dawn straw sheafed harvest of hedgerow, of hay, string nests, and golden machines. And I took it down. I love this next one. Pastel perfume petals of lacquered sap, breast, mustard, whiskered honeybees, as a labyrinth of Taurus whispers fall from the feathered tongues of history. You know, the mention of the honeybees was good, but I love the description of them. I thought that was, it just, you know, made it that much more. And of course, I took it down to the words watercolor dreams. I just thought it was a lovely write and lovely imagery, and I really enjoyed it. So Yeah, great piece, and thank you so much for sharing silences. Great job.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Was the word that you looked up, was it actually from the poem or was it from the quote? Like, was it the word rhyme, R-I-M-E?
I don't know. I thought I said something was from the poem, but I'm probably wrong. Not a big deal. Not a big deal.
I was just asking because in the quote he uses the word rhyme, R-I-M-E, which, you know, when I first saw that, I thought it was an old-fashioned spelling of rhyme, R-H-Y-M-E, but it turned out it's a word for frost.
Right, right. Yeah, that I think that was the word. Because I was, of course, that was hours ago now. I looked and I went, what is that? And looked, but there's so much going on visually in this poem that I just thought everything was so well captured. My weather flesh, I don't know, she just had so much happening that I was like, I'm liking this. You know, you don't always get a really, a piece that's packed full of imagery in that respect. Because each line was like one point and a lot of imagery, and then one point and a lot of imagery. And I thought it was wonderful. You know, they weren't long lines. It wasn't deep, it wasn't heavy, it wasn't thick with words. You know, I didn't feel that way anyway, the way it was broken up. So I just thought that, it's a great job. But there's a lot of great stuff in there. Okay, I'm going to be good now. I'm shutting up.
Well, I have to agree, and great comment. All right. Well, up next we have Ignorance, a Lesser Quality than Conceited Slyness by Time Teller. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
See that? There we go. Ignorance, a Lesser Quality than Conceited Slyness by Tom Teller. Saturated situation, satiated desires, as she languishes upon the chaise lounge, conceited in her art of loving, acquired skills that most women in the community would point blankly refuse. And the weird and dangerous are satiated for another day, leaving them docile in the gutters of valuation and weights and measures. She, the local whore, is as conceited as the vicar and wife. Both believe in their art of deception, and belief becomes externalized confidence, her ego mastered by falsehoods. Too preachy, vicar, or simply an opinion that isn't yours? Let's pretend to be humble, as if we are journeyed spiritually, when in fact the conceited belief that this is the case puts you between the whore's thighs and your minions play games, tempting others to fail, and yet their artwork is somewhat lacking in spirit. The whore in your eyes, an enthusiastic fool to be trained and educated by punishing the ignorance, as if childlike visions are a sin. No, you claim adulthood is all about being cynical behind the pretense of sly deceit and manipulation of the childish ignorance, and somehow you think that's better. Oh, to be ignorant without punishment, how that might feel so much closer to God than any lecture or sermon delivered underhandedly in this adult world of kindness. End poem.
Wonderful, wonderful read there, Jean, and a great write by Time Teller. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yes, this is I love the alliteration in the first stanza. That's a really good. I'm going to try it. Why not? Live dangerously. Saturated situation, satiated desires, as she languishes upon a chaise longue, conceited in her art of loving, acquired skills that most women in the community would point blankly refuse. That's just brilliant. And then we have that next, this is leading you on, and the weird and dangerous are satiated for another day, leaving them docile in the gutters of valuation and weights and measures. Okay. So we have the local whore who thinks she's above everybody, which is also great. And then let's pretend to be humble as we journey spiritually, when in fact the conceited belief that this is the case puts you between the whore's thighs and your minions play games. This is very clever. I really enjoy this. This is a great story. but not, you know, not, it's not disguised as a story. It's lovely. That's all I can say. I really enjoyed it. I love the whole concept. Anyway, so yes, thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like what you had to say about it being a great story, but not disguised as a story. You know, it really does have a strong social commentary to it. So wonderful comment there. And Jean, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Okay. I think that this was just a fabulous write. And I thought it was a great take on the two chosen props. So I say well done on that. And I'm trying to like figure out where I want to begin and end with this hunk of poem that I'm just tempted to grab something. I did love the way it began. You know, Kate, you quoted that stanza, and I like that one a lot. And I like the next lines after that as well. But I guess I can start here. To preach, vicar, or simply an opinion that isn't yours, let's pretend to be humble, as if we were journeyed, if we are journeyed spiritually, when in fact the conceited belief that this is the case puts you between the horse's thighs, and your minions play games, tempting others to fail, and yet their artwork is somewhat lacking in spirit. Because it pulls in both sides of this. It pulls in the vicar, and it pulls in the local whore, and puts them out there and calls them out, so to speak. And I really was looking for something that kind of was a little bit maybe, maybe not direct, but maybe a little more direct, you know, puts the two of them in that same space. But I think that it was just well put together. It really was. And I wish I had I do have the prompts up. You know, to attempt to advise conceited people is like whistling against the wind. That was the first prompt. And then the second, it was a childish ignorance. But now, 'tis little joy I know I'm further off from heaven than when I was a boy. I don't know. I think that was a great take on those two and really well pulled together. So excellent, excellent job with this. So thank you, Time Teller, very much. Wonderful job. I really enjoyed it. It was a great read.
Absolutely. And yeah, I have to agree. He did do a great job of combining the inspiration from the two together. And I, too, like that question that he brought in the middle, too preachy, Vicar, or simply an opinion that isn't your own. And before that, she, the local whore, is as conceited as the vicar and wife both believe in their art of deception, and belief becomes externalized confidence. Their ego is mastered by falsehoods. I really like externalized confidence as a phrase, and the idea of people who appear confident on the outside, on the inside, they don't feel that confidence. And, great lines all the way through, wonderfully thought-provoking in the idea that, some people are ignorant, some people are sly. Oftentimes people only think of themselves and what they can get out of, what they can get from selling something. I really like, and the weird and dangerous are satiated for another day, leaving them docile in the gutters of valuation, weight and weights and measures. I like that because it speaks to me on the idea of keeping the satiated, the mass is satiated, because the weird and the dangerous to me are the people who think for themselves. And you keep them satiated, because if the people who think for themselves speak up, then other people might start thinking thinking for themselves. You know, and also great ending lines, oh, to be ignorant without punishment, how that might feel so much closer to God than any lecture or sermon delivered underhandedly. in this adult world of kindness. You know, there's certainly, I think, throughout these lines, a bite to them. And, you know, I think those end lines to me speak on the idea of trying to find, you know, spirituality in maybe perhaps a false direction. But wonderful lines and very well done. And let's see what we got next. All right. And up next we have Losing in the Choosing by Bill Schiller. And I'm trying to remember here. And Kate, you read Silent Tree, right?
Sorry, I was muted, so I apologize. Yes, I think I did, yes.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, so Losing in the Choosing by Bill Schiller. Sadness is a barricade to consciousness. Despair never needs ensnare. Emotions may think without discrimination, some making fabricate control. Sorrow may have a grasp, but we can prevent its hold, for we are not slaves to that we feel. Sadness is a language we've given voice, where thoughts assault without intention. Feelings are still founded in personal choice. Imprisonment is like derision of the mind. When I want to feel something different, I can do something different with my time. Sadness can be like a speeding car, a car anticipating its own crash. All fires may burn for a time before we sweep away the ash. And he wrote to prompt 14, which was, it actually was a quote from the intro song poem that we heard, which was, my tears must stop, for every drop hinders needle and thread. Yeah, wonderful write by Bill Schiller. And your thoughts, Jean?
Yeah, I like this write very much. You know, and I think it's a good take on the prompt. My tears must stop, you know, and he starts out about sadness. Sadness is a barricade to consciousness. Despair never needs ensnare emotion. May attack without discrimination. Some making fabricate control. Sorrow may have a grasp, but we can prevent its hold. I think that he captured that in the sadness of this and the tears must stop. That's about all I can remember the quote, because that's right in front of me. The rest of it just keeps dropping off in my brain. So, but I think that this was just well done. And a great write, Bill, and thanks for sharing with us. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, wonderful comment and great observation. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it would take a very strong mind to control your emotions to that effect. And it sounds wonderful if you could do it, but emotions, the very fact that they're emotions, mean that they make your body react and change to them, so you have all that going on as well. But it would be great if you could use sadness as a barricade to consciousness. And also, I love that last few lines. Sadness can be like a speeding car, a car anticipating its own crash. All fires may burn for a time before we sweep away the ash. Beautifully done. Yeah, I like it. Where was the bit that I was going to say? Yes. Feelings are still founded in personal choice. Imprisonment is like division of the mind. So yes, basically that is what I thought. You can change things by approaching at a different angle or using something encapsulates what you want against something you don't want. So that sounded very wordy, and that was an absolute load of rubbish. So I enjoyed saying it, so thank you so much. And I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was very clever.
Absolutely. No, I like what you had to say. It, you know, because it's not always easy to control our emotions, and oftentimes we can't. You know, I do think, what I personally think, is that emotions, feelings are something that you feel on the inside, but you can control how much of it, and how much of it you let out. And sometimes that does require changing your situation, you know, which he brought that up. Where was that? Oh, yeah. When I want to feel something different, I can do something different with my time, you know. And that doesn't necessarily always work, but, you know, like I personally find, you know, that when I'm at my like if I'm particularly angry or sad, what helps me is just, you know, finding something, even mundane, like housework to focus on. You know, I like to tell, I tell my friends, you know, if you come over and I'm cleaning and I didn't expect you, please know it's probably because I was angry about something or am angry about something. So, you know, fair heads up. But I liked, Kate, that you brought up those end lines, because I focused in on those ones too. A car anticipating its own crash. Sadness can be like a speeding car, a car anticipating its own crash. I thought that spoke well on the idea of self-fulfilled prophecy, where you keep saying something is going to come true, and it comes true because you pretty much, your actions and your reactions shaped it to come true. You know, wonderful imagery also in the end lines. All fires may burn for time before we sweep away the ash. And I like how that line speaks on the idea of how anger, you know, and losing our temperament is like a fire. And, you know, it can destroy trust, it can destroy relationships. And eventually we're going to be sweeping away that ash. Yeah, and... I also like where he reminds us, this line too is really a good one, and another one that I think would make a great poetry prompt is, for we are not slaves to what we feel. I like that. I think some people have better control of that. You know, I don't always, but it's a great reminder on the idea that we do feel, but we don't have to bend our wills to what we feel. So, wonderful line by Bill Schiller. I have to say, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of entries in this contest, 16, but they're really some great, great quality stuff. So, wonderful, wonderful write tonight. And all right, and let's see what we have next. Up next we have Where Arcane Constellations Remember Our Myriad Lives and Deaths by Eva Pelhazy. And Kate, would you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Yes, certainly. It's just arrived. Here we are. Cool. Okay, where arcane constellations remember our myriad lives and deaths. Okay, and now am I supposed to use the quote as the start of it, I wonder? Oh, well, I'll just go on with it.
If you want to.
Yeah, because it looks like it's chopped off at the beginning there. Okay, I love thee, I love thee. 'Tis all that I can say. It is my vision in the night, my dreaming in the day. And sometimes I see your silhouette, girdled with the mauve halo of rosy-fingered eos, changing from greyish lilac, crassious opal. The dawn unfolds, a new morning, with hazy touch, and my each cell howls, wait, you can't imagine how much I miss you. But you recede, dissolving into sunshine, light flood, while the new day's yanking me back from the borderlands of sixth sense and I carry your memory inside myself, like a fallen maiden, her secret fetus, until the dust wraps your apparition into drifting shadows, when the blue hour unlocks the passageway between life and death, where sunset burns out, collapsing into black velvet through orange and auburn. Then I see your translucent form shaped from autumn smoke of burning leaf litter and spring fragrance of blossoming orchids within reach. I'm sorry, that was orchards. In the depth of unattainable distance where Nick scatters diamond shards all over the celestial dome, pinning up the starry path that someday will lead me home. Your last echoing there. And I look up into the stellar night where Goddess Selene's weaving her star dusty wreath, and arcane constellations remember our myriad lives and deaths. There I will meet you again. End poem.
By Eva. I always enjoy and appreciate her poetry. This has wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like this title, Where Arcane Constellations Remember Our Myriad Lives and Deaths. The idea of remembering all that you've been through with somebody, and you know the almost. I think this poem speaks beautifully on love and loss, and what it's like to lose somebody each night that you remember them and very briefly see that vision of them, and then remember that they have passed on. I really liked the imagery of where it says, like a fallen maiden, her secret, I carry your memory inside myself, like a fallen maiden, her secret fetus, until the dusk wraps your apparition into drifting shadows, when the blue hour unlocks the passageway between life and death, while sunset burns out, collapsing into black velvet through orange and autumn. A wonderful capturing of the sun going down, and how in those evening hours the idea of a veil between life and death being lifted and seeing those apparitions. I did really like where she brought in the goddess Selene, the goddess of the moon, and the goddess Nyx, who was the Greek personification of night. And I thought where Nick scatters diamond shards all over the celestial dome was a great way to describe a star-filled sky. It really speaks on how nighttime is both weighs heavy with its sadness, because it's when you're laying still and when you're most likely to think about someone you've lost. But it also is a magical time. Where you know spirits roam and veils are lifted. Wonderful lines all the way through, and very well done. And your thoughts, Jean?
Yes, I thought this was a fabulous piece. I really did. I thought that there was so much wonderful imagery throughout. I don't mind me, my computer's doing something that feels like. I thought the emotions were well expressed, the emotions of loss and still remembering, not missing, missing yet not missing, holding dear those memories. But you recede, dissolving into sunrise, light flood, while a new day is yanking me back from the borderland of sixth sense. And I carry your memory inside of me, like a fallen maiden, her secret fetus, until the dusk wraps your apparition into drifting shadows. When the blue hour unlocks the passageway between life and death, while sunset burns out, collapsing into black velvet to orange and auburn. I thought that was a great stanza. I just thought it was so well put together with wonderful imagery and thoughts. So, Eva, a wonderful job with this piece and a great take on the prompt. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Kate, you did a beautiful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thank you. It was a delight to read, I have to say. And very cute that the quote worked its way into the beginning of the poem, and so neatly. I can only presume that's what I was supposed to do. So it was great. I mean, there are just so many lines here. And the imagery is just wonderful. Like a fallen maiden, I carry your memory inside myself. Like a fallen maiden, her secret fetus, until the dawn, the dusk, wraps your apparition into drifting shadows. That's just lovely. It really is. It's very well written, and it just completely flows and moves so beautifully that you want to get on to the next line quickly as you can. That's really good. It really is. And you've picked out the different stanzas and lines that I thought was particularly telling. But I like the fact that there's a little bit of hope at the end. Where our myriad lives and deaths, there I will meet you again. So it was lovely. Very well done. And thank you so much for sharing with us. Most enjoyable.
Absolutely. And yes, you're right. It was really nice how this does have that sense of hope and that sense, Neil, that idea of meeting again at the end. So great comment. And up next we have Not Quite Happiness by Matt29. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Okay, Not Quite Happiness by Matt29. And the quote was, there is even a happiness that makes the heart afraid. So that's where it starts. Excitement is everywhere as the couple arrive, all faces focused and ready for their news. Cheers erupt as they are announced. Silence follows the couple's rise to speak. The wind picks up as words seem wrong. People are not sure how to respond, putting on a brave facade and congrats, whilst really thinking ridiculous to change. Now their insecurities take full momentum, scurrying along like ants seizing their moment. Where will you live and how will we cope? Expressing resentment instead of happiness. How could they move away and get married? What about family and their responsibilities? Their family's hearts shattering into pieces, feeling totally and utterly let down and betrayed. Condemned to missing out on their lives, unable to take part in their wedding, feeling like they've been stabbed in the heart, lost in a meander of squashed dreams. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Jean, and a beautiful, beautiful and thoughtful write by Matt29. And Kate, your thoughts?
Aha, yes. I like the beginning. The beginning just tantalizes and makes you want to find out more. Excitement is everywhere as the couple arrive, all faces focused and ready for their news. Tears erupt as they are announced. Silence follows the couple's rise to speak. Now, do we ever actually get to find out what this particular momentous occasion was about? I don't know. I'm kind of, you know, I'm intrigued by the last stanza because it's giving me mixed messages as it does. Condemned to missing out on their lives, unable to take part in their wedding, feeling that they've been stabbed in the heart, lost in a myriad of squashed dreams.
I think it is? I could be wrong, but I think they might have ran off, eloped to get married.
Oh, hence missing the marriage that was planned. Gotcha. I mean, you know, funnily enough, my mind was going, are they dead? Have they come back to have a look at what their wedding might have been?
That could be a possibility too, though. It could be definitely a possibility.
Oh, dear. Lovely, though. Lovely. Well written and very interesting, as it makes you have to think, which is great. So I really enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of have a feeling that they eloped or left their family out of things because it looked like they just went somewhere far away and got married. and that the family did not get to enjoy with them. The wind picks up, as words seem wrong. People are not sure how to respond. Putting on a brave facade and congrats, whilst really thinking ridiculous change. Now their insecurities take full momentum, scurrying along like ants seizing their moment. Where will you live and how will we cope? Expressing resentment instead of happiness. You know, and the quote, there is even a happiness which makes the heart afraid. So, you know, when you distance yourself completely and move yourself out of the situation completely, well, that can make you a little nervous, you know, a whole different outlook on things. So, I mean, I think it's a good take on the prompt. I thought it was intriguing is what I thought, because it said a lot, but it didn't say it, you know, and so that was kind of interesting in the way Matt penned it. So, but it was a good piece, definitely a good piece. And, yeah. Stuff.
Absolutely. And I have to agree with you. Intriguing was definitely a great word choice to describe it because, yeah, as you said, Gene, he does, you know, leave it somewhat open to interpretation. But I definitely get the impression that this couple has made a choice that they felt worked best for themselves. And you know, and I think that's definitely a wonderful thing to do, but sometimes when we do make a choice that's best for ourselves, it means whether you meant to or not, sometimes hurting other people's feelings. You know, there may have been, you know, family and friends who are looking forward to celebrating the occasion with them and being there. Or it may be even be that the idea of not only the idea of elopement, but the idea of moving far away from family and friends. I know it can be especially hard on parents and grandparents. Now it's easier obviously nowadays because we have Skype and, you know, other ways to communicate with family, but distance, you know, can still be heartbreaking. So
right.
Wonderful.
When you were talking, Pam, I was like looking at this, and I guess that the last two stanzas really kind of give more explanation to it. Although this seems like the last two stanzas seem to be from the family's point of view and not the bride and groom's. You know, how could they move away and get married? What about family and their responsibilities? Well, you know, I mean, when you get married, you know, you start your own life. And, you know, you may step out into your own thing, but it doesn't mean you're gone for good from situation. Anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting because I looked and I went, oh, well, there it is right there. But
yeah.
I don't, yeah, can't help it. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, when you do move away, you get married and move away, you start your own family and your own responsibilities, but you don't forget about, you know,
yeah,
the people you've left. So
right.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And up next we have "Judgment is Mine, Saith the Lord" by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. In humility, with all gentility, I must confess, without contest or protest, world opinions my test. To hear the bleeding sounds of cheating men who can't defend their slights against a weighted stance of remonstrance at glance. Perchance some sort of feeble dance they advance, attempt to lance. Presumptions bloat, foolish long-haired goats, stuck, guttural gloat. Shall I abide in ramshackle pride, allied or divide the mendacious trance? No longer hide their swollen-eyed envy in a brevity of rote denial? Is it not vile to stand on trial for God-given wisdom, to be judged by unequal juries of non-peers who queer all demonstration of superior intellect, and who fear my freedom to be all that I've been endowed to be from birth to bier? Can you not hear their disparaging slander of my wherewithal? Does it not appall to see them scratch and crawl, try to maul, engulf in fiendish squall, to undermine where's what's mine by right? Try to ignite the flames of jealousy only to succumb to stellar might. In all humility, I abhor senility, and I am self-righteous in dignity. Therefore, I bow low in civility to honor and shame servility. End poem. And Jean, your thoughts?
Wow, what a piece. Deborah never really ceases to amaze me with some of the stuff that she pulls together. I have to say, you know, so much rhyme in this piece, which I'm not used to with her work, which might sound silly, but I'm used to, like, everything's usually, it's just not a bunch of rhymes. She has some rhymes and things, but not quite to this extent. But in humility, with all gentility, I must confess, without contest, to protest, or protest, world opinions, my test. To hear the bleeding sounds of cheating men who can't defend their slights against the weighted stance of women's strength at glance. Wow. That's a lot of rhyme there. And strong words, strong thoughts. And then, you know, the second stanza as well. It's just, it's really pulled together nicely. Let me see now. Do we have, I have to see what the prompt is. Do you know, Pam, off the top of your head? Like,
off
what
the
one
top of my head, I think it's same one that Time Teller wrote.
To attempt to advise conceited people is like whistling against the wind. There it is down there. I don't know. Just blended in with everything else. I think it's a great take on that. Perchance some sort of feeble dance they advance, attempt to lance. Presumption to bloat, foolish long-haired goats, stuck guttural gloat. Shall I abide in ramshackle pride, allied, or divide the mendacious trance? No longer hide their swollen-eyed envy in a bevy of rites. This is just really, really well done. I would have to really think through it in order to pull out a better stanza and say, yes, that's it. I'm not that in tune tonight with myself. Not with her, just with myself. But just a really, really well done piece with a lot of wonderful thoughts in it, you know. And I do like the use of the rhyme, so don't get me wrong, Deborah. I just kind of threw me for a minute. Well done, well done, very well written, and much enjoyed.
Absolutely, yeah. Great comment there, and I do have to agree. You know, she did a wonderful job with that. That use of the inner and end rhyme. So, very cool. And Kate, your thoughts?
Sorry. I couldn't get a hold of my mute button. It was deciding to go off on a journey of its own. Oh, dear. I do like those last two lines. I thought they were pretty good. In all humility, I abhor senility. And self-righteous indignity. Therefore, I bow low in civility to honor and shame servility. Servility. Ah, yeah, good use of words. That's very clever, those last two lines. They are. This is a judgment is mine, saith the Lord. So I suppose in humility, with all gentility, I must confess, without contest or protest, words, opinions, my test, to hear the bleating sounds of cheating men, who can't defend their slights against the weighted stance of lone strands at their glance. Yes. So, yeah, it's true that you can bluff all you like, but you will be judged, and perhaps not the way you want to be judged. But it will happen. And foolish people who deny the truth of what can't be judged as anything else but wrong. I just like it. I just think it really works well. The whole thing seems to point at don't consider yourself above the law or above the judgment of God. And that's you cannot get fairer than that. So well done, and thank you for sharing.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I really liked this one. I thought it has hard-hitting and powerful word choices, great rhyme flow, strong, hard-hitting imagery. I really like how it speaks on the idea, as you were saying, Kate, people who think they're above the law or think they're above morality and can do whatever they want. I really like perchance some sort of feeble dance, they advance, attempt to lance, presumptions bloat, foolish long-haired goat, stuck guttural gloat. You can definitely see the idea of being swollen with pride within those lines. I think Deborah does a great job of not holding back when it comes to, swinging punches at society. I also really like the question in line, denial. Is it not vile to stand on trial for God-given wisdom, to be judged by unequal juries of non-peers? You know, wonderful lines in the idea that we're all given a gift by God. And I think that the two stanzas, the first two stanzas, to me anyways, speak on that idea of, you know, you should use your God-given gift and you should take pride in it, but you shouldn't let the pride overtake you. And you shouldn't let it overtake you to the point to where you think that you can do anything you want. I also really like engulf and fiendish squall to undermine what's mine by right. Try to ignite the flames of jealousy only to succumb to stellar might. Definitely, again, hard-hitting line. I like how it speaks on the flames of jealousy. And the idea of, you know, I think within this poem, to me, there's the idea of self-honoring, of knowing yourself, of honoring your own gifts, and not kowtowing or bowing down under the weight of other people's opinions. So excellent write and very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next. All right, up next we have Not to Say Farewell by L.G. Mace. And Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
I would be happy to. Just bear with me a second. Oh, yes, got it. Oh, I got it. So cool. Right, we have Not to Say Farewell by L.G. Mace. Time so slowly slips away, as does it haltingly go, between our comings to our partings, so very, very sad. The clock hand steeped in molasses stops time's portly flow, remembering the secret stolen kisses we could have had. The sly look slipped from lingering lowered lashes gives me tickles of humorous, well-born laughter. I remember seeing you in your pretty dress, tied with pink sashes, spending a pleasant afternoon out under the arbor rafter, the dark and light blue of swallows swiftly flying by, in flashes, walking hand in hand across the well-groomed emerald lawn. And time, that's that stealthy thief, tells us by the chiming of its bells ring that I must again let you go back to your proper place. I await with longings all through the night till I hear nightingale sing. Haunted by restless turnings, will remember every moment your lovely face, wishing with all my heart that the calendar pages off would fly, with anxious desires and banked passions, that the day would quickly come. This deep, deep longing torments me, so I feel that I would die. The day of our marriage beacons, letting me never again to be lonesome. When with the fulfillment of our sweet passions will surely make us one. Into our own special home, where we will forever most happily dwell, together forever, never having to say farewell. End poem.
Wonderful, wonderful read there, Kate. And such a beautiful heartfelt write by L.G. Mace. I like how she tells a tale of love and loss and of death. At least it seems to be a tale of death and the meeting of a young man and his fiance or wife or, you know, love that, you know, after she has died. And it's, you know, in those evening hours that they're meeting, whether in dreams or her ghost. It has a very, it kind of makes me think of the Gothic tales of the Victorian era feel to it. I really like the imagery in the clock hands steeped in molasses stops time's portly flow. Remembering the secret stolen kisses we could have had, a sly look slipped from lingering lowered lashes gives me tickles of humorous, well-born laughter. I guess with the idea, now that I'm reading that part, the idea of the stolen kisses and the glances, maybe they were never actually together, he was obviously in love with her, and that there's this kind of a sense of regret. It's such a beautiful, emotive, and haunting write. I like her attention to detail. Like, I remember seeing you in your pre-dress tied with pink sashes, and that I must again let you go back to your proper place. I await with longing all through the night till I hear nightingales sing, haunted by restless turnings. We'll remember every moment your lovely face, wishing with all my heart that the calendar pages off would fly, you know, and, beautiful lines. I thought at first this had to do with death, but the more I reread it, and sometimes it, and I apologize for that, but sometimes it takes a second or third reading before I capture, it almost feels like the idea, you know, obviously with, wanting time to pass so they can get to that wedding date and, you know, be together as husband and wife. The day of our marriage beacons, letting me never again to be lonesome. You know, that's such a beautiful thought. And I think, you know, if you can find the right person, you've got a good marriage. It's one of the best things about a good marriage is that idea of not being lonely, of having a partner to stand by your side. So wonderful story, right? And very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a well-expressed piece. Wonderful take on the prompt. I thought the longing was very well expressed. You know, the desire to be together in life and marriage. You know, at first it does come off as if they're speaking of a death, a parting of ways. True death is the way it came off. But then it was, I got to this point, this deep, deep longing torments me, so I feel that I would die. The day of our marriage beckons, letting me never again to be lonesome, when with the fulfillment of our sweet passion will surely make us one, and to our own special home where we will forever most happily dwell, together forever, never having to say farewell. It was just, there was that positive note at the end. You know, you go through the beginnings and it seems kind of sad and very, very, very sad. I guess I'll say it that way. And then it changes around. At first, I wasn't sure where it was going because there was a mention. I don't know. I remember seeing you in your pretty dress tied with pink sashes, spending a pleasant afternoon. So I thought that this was going to be a whole different kind of write, but that it transitioned around and became something much different, but beautifully done. So great job, LG, and thanks for sharing with us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. wonderful comment. And Kate, your thoughts?
Sorry, I'll mute again. Yes, this was very sad. And yet, I don't know, it seems to have a little, there seems to be a dichotomy here. We've got at the end and to our own special home where we will forever most happily dwell, together forever, never having to say farewell. I suppose that might be considered as death. You know, you'll be together forever there. But it just seems odd that it comes at the end like that. When I thought everything else was going a different direction. Beautifully done. Always good to have a twist. And maybe I'm reading it completely wrongly, which is not, you know, not unheard of. But I really thought it was very well written. Lovely, lovely movement and flow to this. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing with us. LG, as usual, interesting.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say I'm glad that between you and Jean, that I wasn't the only one who saw the idea of death within those first stanzas. And yeah, it is always nice to get a poem that goes in an unexpected direction. All right. And oh, yes, I already did put the next poem up. Look at that. I'm ahead of myself. All right. Up next, we have Come Home by C.L. Howard. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Come Home by C.L. Howard. In the morning when my light did dawn and fair or troubled winds had not yet blown, I sat upon my mother's knee and listened to my father drone. Heavy were his wizened words, which leached into my fertile ear, and finding root within my breast, grew steadily there from year to year. Life's a work of many sorts, with many fields to sow, their seeds to plant and food to give in all the seasons when they grow. Your mind is like that fertile field, seeds and lessons learned, but beware the weeds of wicked thoughts. 'Tis better if they were burned. Every morning when you awaken, when the sun has yet to rise, prepare yourself for labor. Set your eye upon the prize. In earthen fields, plant the seeds. Water them in deep. Remove the ever wayward plant. What you sow is what you reap. And when at last your evening comes, once you've faced your winds and broom, turn your eye to heaven's knee. Then, my son, come home. Come home. End poem. Nice.
Great, Eugene, and a wonderful heartfelt write by C.L. Howard. And he wrote to the quote, peace and rest at length have come all the days long. Toil is past, and each heart is whispering home, home at last. And I really like how he captured the essence of that prompt. I also like that this made me think of that song by, is it Lynyrd Skynyrd, something son? Wayward Son. Right? The song where he's
Kansas?
The song, oh, sorry, what were you going to say, Jean?
Are you talking about the song Carry On, O Wayward Son? There'll be peace when you are there?
Nope, not that one. The one where they're getting advice from their mother. Simple Man. That's it. Sorry. I was thinking, it makes me think of the song Simple Man. Where they're getting advice from their mother, but in this case, the advice is coming from the father, you know, and I think it's particularly good advice. And I like the description of heavy were his wizened words, which reached into my fertile ears and finding root within my breast, were stretched steadily there from year to year. I like that. The idea of how a child's mind and heart is so open to learning new things, and you've got to plant those seeds early. And I really like the imagery and metaphors in earthen fields, plant the seeds, water them in deep, remove the ever wayward plant, what you sow is what you reap. And like I said, just great, well, it has great rhyme and flow, great words of wisdom, beautiful imagery, and, you know, speaks well on going out there and living your own life, but then also remembering that you have a home and a family to come home to whenever you, you know, you need them or they need you. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
Hello. Yes, come home. Oh, very poignant. Again, we have somebody who's lost somebody who their love or their, in the case, I'm presuming son or daughter, has gone off on their own. Am I right in the morning? And my light did dawn, the fear of trouble went out. I sat upon my mother's knee and listened to my father drone. Ain't that the truth? And finding root within my breast grew steadily there from year to year. And so, yeah, this is beautifully written and such a lovely, it's soft and gentle yet sad. And it looks as if it's going to continue to be sad. And when at last your evening comes, once you face your winds and roam, turn your eye to heaven's knee, then my son, come home. That's beautiful. Now, I would like to know if anybody knows what brum means. Brum, 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 brum. Car sound. No idea. I'll look it up anyway. So, yes, that was beautifully done. Thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, did you say drone?
No, I said brum. Soft brum. Oh, it's a plant.
Yeah.
It is a bit of plantage.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yep. It's Okay, cool. And wonderful comment. And Jean, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. I thought this was a wonderful piece by CL. Really beautiful. And there were three stanzas I liked, so I have to say. But I'll take the last three. You know, every morning when you awaken, when the sun has yet to rise, prepare yourself for labor. Set your eye upon the prize. All the way down to the very end. Because the end line, the last stanza, I should say. And when at last your evening comes, once you've faced your winds and brum, turn your eye to heaven's knee. Then, my son, come home. I thought that was beautifully done. It had a wonderful feel and emotional feel to it when you read it. So I think that says a lot right there. So well done, C.L. Howard, and thank you for sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. All right, and up next we have Simplicity Draws Us Near Heaven by Dr. Human for Humanity. And Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
I certainly will. So, Simplicity Draws Us Near Heaven. As we age, we get crooked. As we rage, we are hooked. Our free flow life gets shrinked. Our eyes get used to false dreams. We go further from the heaven. Our joy and woe are woven without any touch zone. Our sensitivity are blown. We try to hide our love. As we grow, we get tough. The cruel jaws are born out of angers and wrongs. As a baby never knows who is friend or who is foe, they only play and play for joy as they have no time to leave their toys. End poem.
Great read, Kate. And a wonderful write by Dr. Human for Humanity. I'm really glad they were inspired. In fact, I'm glad everybody in this contest was inspired. I really appreciated the write. And not Kate, sorry. Jean, your thoughts?
Prompt three. Right, I got to go through a prompt three. Got it. I hate when I can't identify where it's coming from. Sorry, I hate to sound that way. It just gets, I tried to say, well, yeah, that's a great take on the prompter. It's not when I don't know what I'm.
Oh, that was the one about, it was childish ignorance, but now 'tis little joy to know I'm further off from heaven than when I was a boy.
Okay, cool beans. Thank you so much. I get totally, well, I get baffled if I have no idea. You know, as we age, we get crooked. As we rage, we are hooked. Our free flow life gets shrink. Our eyes get used to false dreams. What an interesting way to start this piece out, you know. But I have to go down here. As a baby never knows who is friend or who is foe, they only play and play for joy, as they have no time to leave their toys. I think that it is a good take on the quote. You know, it has the elder aspect of life. Not elder, but older aspect of life. And then we have the child in there. And I guess that's how it all gets pulled together, you know. And I like that. I think it was well done. Clever take on the prompt, for sure. So thank you very, very much, Dr. Human for Humanity. Nice job.
Absolutely.
Nice job.
And I'm the same way, because with that prompt, that's why I like to see people either have the prompts attached to their poems or have it put in the AN, and
right.
You know, because I want to know what the springboard was for,
right,
for your, you know, but wonderful comment. And Kate, mm-hmm, your thoughts?
Yes, that first stanza is so good, so well put.
Mm.
And then we have the rest where we go down. We try to hide our love as we go, we get tough. The cruel jaws are born out of angers and wrongs. Yes, we react. Life does change you. Life makes you different as you go along. So what was acceptable or even enjoyable in your youth becomes something that you really don't want as you get older and wiser. And so this is about, how we change. We go further from heaven. Our joy and woe are woven without any touchstone. Our sensitivities are blown. Yeah, as I say, we change. Life changes us. And we can't be the person that we were, which is a great shame. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I may have got the context completely wrong, but I did enjoy it. And that's what I took out of it. So, yeah, great. I liked it a lot. Thank you.
I like that. Wonderful comment. Yeah, and I like this one too. You know, it had a nice flow to it, wonderful imagery. I thought very thoughtful and philosophical line on the idea of, as you were saying, Kate, on how we change as we get older. Sometimes that change can lead to a kind of a bitterness and a hardness and an idea of, I think, prejudging people. And the last stanza, I thought, spoke on that idea of how, you know, babies don't prejudge people. As a baby never knows who is friend or who is foe, they only play and play for joy as they have no time to leave their toys. And I thought that end line was particularly poignant, and it reminds us that oftentimes as we grow and mature, we have to leave behind that childhood innocence. We have to leave behind those childhood toys for more mature pursuits. I also really like the stanza, we go further from the heaven, our joy and woe are woven without any touchstone. Our sensitivity are blown. Wonderful line. You know, the idea of, you know, just the interwoven, you know, joy and woes, I really liked. So beautifully, beautifully written and very well done. All right. And grab our very last poem for the night, which is my poem. And I entered this into a contest where you could choose the prompt and but you had to write a poem with near rhyme couplets, and Jean, of course, you know, if you could leave comments after I'm done, I'd appreciate that. All right. This is North Wind Whispers Across the Fields. The sun is shining on a serene day while nature's divinity is on display. The splendid sky of brightest blue holds crows that caw and doves that coo. In the high hell light of afternoon, flowers are swayed in sweet commune. Willow trees are gently weeping, touched by lovers in their meeting. When evening comes, the air is hushed. As sunset brings a painted blush, stars they sparkle bold and bright, knowing songs of elves and sprites. Magical moments stretch and rise, a welcome sight for watchful eyes. Poetic thoughts in soil and bloom march across the month of June. Spirits dancing around gravestones while rest eternal breath and bones. Savored sips of chamomile tea bring fancied flights of memories, remembering times of summer past, where in love and chances dice was casted. North winds carry across the fields paraded parachutes of dandelion seeds. End poem.
Nice work, Pam. Kate, do you want to start us off?
Oh, yes, of course. Unfortunately, I've been trying to find it. Oh, got it. There we are. Good. Sorry about that. I was looking to start writing comments and I completely lost myself. I can't do two things at once. Impossible. So here we have. This is lovely. I love the quote. The sun, and then we have the sun is shining on a serene day while nature divinity is on display. That's a lovely start. And I love, zephyrs. I love the zephyr winds. It's always very good to write that in. That's in the quote, by the way, sorry. Stars, they sparkle bold and bright, knowing songs of elves and sprites. Oh, that's beautiful. I love the fairy tale aspect of that. It's so cool. Spirits dancing around gravestones while rest eternal breath and bones. So, yes, we have. Oh, and then we have savored sips of chamomile tea brings fancy flights of memory. Yeah, I thought it was beautifully done. It's just so lyrical. And again, I love those two stanzas, two lines in a stanza. It makes it more impactful, I think, that you've got boom, boom, you know, it comes straight at you. Nothing gets lost within loads and loads of lines. They're all highlighted in their own way. So I think it's very well done. It was beautifully written. So thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, I like the use of the couplets, Pam, for this. It was a good choice. And I have to say, I was loving the imagery up in, from the beginning. You know, the sun is shining on a serene day while nature's divinity is on display. The splendid sky of brightest blue holds crows that caw and doves that coo. Love the rhyme, which you said was part of the format, was form. And, but it seemed so natural. It was so natural. And the high-held light of afternoon, flowers are swayed in sweet communion. Willow trees are gently weeping, touched by lovers in their meeting. It was really a beautiful, beautiful rite. You know, as I say, the imagery was great. The idea of the puppets was good. You know, the rhyme was great. I thought it was a nice take on the prompt on top of all that. So, I mean, you can't beat that. Just really nicely done. So,
thank you.
Thanks for sharing. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much. And, I appreciate that. I want to say thank you to both of you. As always, I have so much fun hanging out with you both, and thank you for being my twisted sisters. Thank you to Silent Tree for hanging on the board and making comments in Late Night Poets. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we were on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Now, make sure, of course, to keep an eye out on all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night. Great show, Pam. Great choice of prompts. And good night, everybody.
Good night to you both. Had a lovely evening. And I'm now going to go back to bed. Good night.
Get some rest. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, my darling. Bye-bye, Pam.